Welcome back to Random Trek, the podcast in which I, your host, Scott McNulty, discuss a random episode of Star Trek with a non-random guest. I have yet another repeat guest. This is a month of repeat guests. Mr. David J. Loris joining me. David, thank you for joining me.
Anytime. I live Trek, I breathe Trek, I eat Trek. Well, I don't eat Trek because I've tried Trek beer. Don't drink the Star Trek beer. Trust me.
They came out with a whole variety of Star Trek beers, didn't they?
Yeah, the Vulcan Ale, the Klingon Imperial Porter, and I gave up after that. although there is one that was a limited edition, totally separate, that was Quadro Triticale, that is delightful.
Ah, well, there you go.
Totally different brewery, though.
I don't drink beer, so even Star Trek-themed beer I do not drink, so... I'm missing out, or not missing out, apparently, as the case may be. I only like Synthahol.
Ah, I also like whatever it is that's green.
Ah,
all yes. I know is it's green.
All is green. Now, David, we've already, you haven't introduced yourself, so tell the people a little bit about yourself. Now, if people who listen to this podcast, I assume, listen to the other incomparable shows, so they are certainly familiar with your voice, but just in case there's someone who only listens to Random Trek, little intro about yourself.
Well, I would hope so. I mean, if all you've heard is this very episode, you think I'm just a lush, which, you know, fair enough. I'm a writer, so it fits the profile. It's on brand.
Mm-hmm.
I work in theater. I work in podcasting. I make the Incomparable Radio Theater. If you've listened to the Star Trek episodes of the Incomparable, you've heard me go on and on about Star Trek. Trying to think, what else? What else do I do? I do some graphic design. I do some sound design for theater. I do some consulting for theaters. I do a lot of things for theaters.
You are a theater geek.
Apparently.
What's your favorite play? Or who's your favorite playwright? Whichever one's easier to answer.
Oh, I can do that. Tom Stoppard and either Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead or Arcadia.
Oh, I have seen Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are dead. I have not seen Arcadia.
I have a whole story about not getting to see Arcadia for decades, but that's another podcast.
That's a different podcast.
It was a cursed play. We'll just say that. And when I saw it, it was awful.
Oh, no, that's not good.
Bad production.
My worst theater. I have not been to the theater as much as I probably should, considering I spent much of my life in New York, and I spent the remainder of my life so far in Philadelphia, which has a good theater scene.
It is a good theater scene.
I have not gone as much as I should. Although many moons ago, I was an English major. You have to take, you know, I went to Lehigh University and you had to take a certain number of courses, and they required you to take one course that was either you had to choose between Shakespeare or Chaucer. I think there might have been one other, but I don't remember. So I opted for Shakespeare, which I had taken a class about Shakespeare before. So in another class, I had to read Antony and Cleopatra, which is, in fact, my least favorite Shakespeare play. I really like Shakespeare. Antony and Cleopatra, not a fan of it. And so this class, the Shakespeare specific class, of course, we had to read Antony and Cleopatra. And then we were given a group assignment where we had to investigate the staging of a play, the historical staging of a play, and my group got Antony and Cleopatra.
Oh.
And then as part of that, we had to act out a scene from the play, Antony and Cleopatra. and then, you know, the big kind of excitement for the class was that as a group, we would go to New York and see a Shakespeare play. Because we were in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, a couple-hour drive to New York. This year, the play we went to see, Antony and Cleopatra.
Antony and Cleopatra.
Yes. At the Brooklyn Academy of Music, which is a lovely venue, very uncomfortable seats at the time, 10, 20 years ago. I don't know if they've changed it.
I remember those seats. Oh, man. My God.
I'm a large man, and those seats were very uncomfortable.
I'm not, and they were uncomfortable.
It was not a pleasant experience. And plus, it was one of those, I'm not, and I promise we'll get to Star Trek people. I am not a traditionalist, so I'm not one of these people who thinks, oh, you have to stage a Shakespeare play exactly as it's written, and it should be time appropriate and all that stuff. I say, go crazy. Adapt it all you want, because that's the fun. I just really disagreed with the adaptation of this because it had recast the Romans as businessmen, and the Egyptians were kind of like, you know, laissez-faire hippies. It was very strange.
Oh, my.
I didn't like it. I didn't like the play. I don't like the play to begin with, but I didn't like it.
Well, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. That's my Antony and Cleopatra story.
Which all goes to show beggars can't be Chaucer's.
Oh, there
that was you a go. Long way to wait for that.
It was. And I'm sure people have stopped listening because they're like, I don't care about these boring Shakespeare stories that you're telling me, Scott.
You're listening to Random Theater on the Incomparable Network.
That's right. Now the episode of Star Trek that we're talking about, I will take an episode of Star Trek over Antony and Cleopatra almost any day. I'm not sure if I would take this episode that we watched, which is in fact the Royale, TNG episode 12 from season 2. Spoiler alert, people, this is a bad Star Trek episode.
In France, they call it the Royale with cheese.
That's right. It would be better.
A lot of cheese.
If you get a piece of cheese as you watch the show, but you don't. I didn't, I mean, at least.
You can tell how good an episode it is that we've spent, you know, like, what, 5 minutes talking about theater.
It's true.
Although it is kind of appropriate, I guess. It's thematic.
Yes, I was going to ask you.
Yeah.
Which is probably not a fair question. But what – so this episode revolves around a book, a fake book that is in this episode that then generates this world that these aliens inexplicably create for this astronaut. So there's this fake book in here that the story centers around. So I was going to ask you if you had a favorite show or movie or episode of a show that involves a similar kind of fake media that the entire show revolves around.
Oh, dear.
Because this is a trope that happens a lot. But
I may have to come back to that. I got to think about that.
Let that percolate. I didn't give you any time. I did not prep you with that question.
Because I love doing fake stories within stories. I love that kind of thing. I mean, one of the things that is vaguely interesting about this is that it was originally, I mean, it's under a pseudonym, but it was written by Tracy Torme, who wrote The Big Goodbye in season one.
Mm-hmm. And which, Mel Torme's son.
You know, and that... You would think I would love that because it's right in my wheelhouse. It's fake noir.
Mm-hmm.
And I like the concept of Picard being all like, I want to be Philip Marlowe. But it's just not, I mean, it's a high point of season one, but you know, very low bar.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just sort of there. And it's a lot of Picard telling us how unutterably awesome it is to be in this world. And unfortunately, we get to see it and go, you have better taste than that, Jean-Luc. Come on. Right?
Yes.
And so it is a very similar, you know, fake world within a world. And I mean, this is essentially a holodeck episode without the holodeck. Right?
It is exactly such.
And so it's sort of, now it apparently wasn't even his original concept, which is why it's a pseudonym, but this is the Maurice Hurley era of Star Trek. I hated seeing Maurice Hurley's name on credits because I got to realize, oh, you're the one who's making this not good. Okay.
And, you're responsible.
And so it makes perfect sense to me that it was rewritten to be something very similar to something they had already done. And it was just not,
Yes, and Tracy Torme, I've not read the original script, but he was quite upset with the changes. And so, as you said, he removed his name and they put a pseudonym on. And he, of course, in his telling, says that everyone who came up to him said, gee, your script was brilliant. What happened to the show? Now, I think he might be a little biased on his part. So I've not read the original script. It could be brilliant, but the show that ended up on screen... Not so good. I understand why he wanted his name taken off of it.
I'm just assuming this is not a city on the edge of forever kind of thing.
No, I don't think so. And I think it's tricky. I applaud the concept of this show.
And that's I forgot where I was going with that. The thing that I like better about this than I like about The Big Goodbye is that in The Big Goodbye, we've got the whole, oh, this is wonderful. I love this. This is brilliant. Whereas this, they're all going, wow, what a crappy novel. Right. And mm-hmm. that's kind of brilliant because then you can have fun with it. There's no fun in trying to take this thing and tell us it's brilliant and tell us it's, you know, whereas this is just like, why are we trapped in this hack novel? Oh my God. Which is kind of ironic, all things considered, but we'll let that slide because yes. we love the show.
Yeah. And that's the problem, right? I think I like the idea. It's very clever. Mm-hmm. But there's a high degree of difficulty when you say, okay, let's trap our characters in the worst novel ever written. Because then they are, in fact, stuck in a really bad story, and you know it's a really bad story, so you have to work really hard to make it knowingly a bad story that then turns into an entertaining episode of Star Trek. And I think that that's the transition point at which this episode fails.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying it's easy to do. I could not do it any better, I'm sure. But I'm telling you, not so good, this episode.
And it's sort of like it sets up – I mean, it's got a good hook, right? Mm-hmm. It's not a bad hook. And it just keeps – it's like we'll throw up some kind of obstacle and then we solve it. And, oh, there's another obstacle. Oh, we solved it. There's no tension through the whole thing. It's just – it's – oh.
Yeah, and they go out of their way of kind of setting up this, what is it, Mickey D? Is that his name?
Something like that.
Oh. Mickey D, yes, is coming, and everyone's like, oh boy, this is going to be trouble. And it's kind of irrelevant, really. and so the characters that we know and love who beam down to the away team, Worf, Data, and Riker, are observing this story. They're not really in it, even though they are playing. They halfway through, they realize they are the foreign investors who have to buy the hotel. But they're not really part of it.
They fake their way into that because they realize that's the only way out.
Right. Which doesn't make any sense either, frankly.
Yeah. Because if this has been this recurring cycle stuck in the story of the book, those characters should already be there. And so where are they? And why aren't they upset that these three guys are impersonating them? And suddenly that's already more interesting than anything going on in the show.
Exactly. That's what they should have had to have captured and kidnapped the actual foreign investors and then pretended to be them or something.
Right.
But no. Right. And so the we'll start at the beginning because I think the beginning is pretty good. Obviously, yeah. Chief O'Brien has set the transporter on dramatic reveal at the beginning of this, because they, you know, they're at this planet. The Klingons have passed by and said, yo, there's some weird stuff orbiting this planet. And everybody's kind of annoyed that they have to do a detour to look at this planet. Nobody really wants to be here. Geordi is really not a fan of this planet for whatever reason. It's very cold. There's a lot of methane. Nobody's happy. But they find some debris. They beam it on board. It's this piece of a spaceship, seemingly. But it's beamed aboard away from us. So we don't know what the marking is that they found on it. They turn it around. And it's NASA and an American flag with 52 stars, as they point out later. And then cut to the opening credits. So that's like, oh, that's interesting. How did this get here? What's happening? Maybe we'll find an astronaut on the planet. Which we do, but he's dead, sadly. Spoiler alert.
Oh, no.
and so I think, well, I've seen this episode before, so I knew it was coming, so I wasn't excited. But I do think that's an exciting setup.
It really is. I mean, like I said, it's a great hook. It pulls you right in, and you kind of want to know. I mean, this is one of the few times you actually have a reference to NASA in any of the Star Trek
mm-hmm.
shows. And you kind of want to know about those two extra stars.
Exactly.
Like, hey, wait a second.
They don't really talk about those. Yeah. And this is an interesting episode of Star Trek because it, obviously science fiction is of its time and they cannot actually predict the future. So the emblem, the NASA emblem, is the wrong NASA emblem. but they didn't know that because it was the right NASA emblem at the time. So,
and they mentioned Fermat's last theorem doesn't have a solution, which 6 years later it did.
Exactly. So it's always, that's kind of fun to be like, you know,
because there is a Deep Space Nine episode that fixes the Fermat thing.
Right. They said there are alternate solutions that are more elegant or something like that.
Yes.
But it's just nice. And that was about the highlight, that my two favorite parts of this episode, because the rest of the, so they beam down to the, they find this area of the planet that has breathable air and a structure of some kind. Riker is eager to go down. So Picard says, take a limited away team. Riker says, okay, Data, Worf, you're with me. They beam down. They can't see the building, but they see a rotating door, which is kind of weird. And they go through it. And Riker is very excited.
Because that's what you do.
That's what you do. And
you see a door in dark fog. I'm going through it.
Well,
it's revolving.
That's what they were beamed out. I think Riker said something about, well, we're here. So we might as well, which is in keeping with Riker's character. And I do have a quibble, though, because they go in. And I would think, just as a person who is exploring a new planet, that the immediate thing you would do is, let's see if we can get out.
Right.
And then go back in and explore. But they don't do that. They kind of, you know, work the room a little bit, see what's happening, and then try and leave. And turns out they can't leave for no apparent reason. And at the end of the episode, it's really no apparent reason. We don't know why they couldn't leave. We don't know why this thing was built. We don't know who built it. We don't know how these people got there. We don't know anything at the end of this episode. It's very frustrating. We do know that if you ever want to cheat at craps, though, you should bring Data with you.
That's a nice trick he's able to pull.
It is. And that also, I was thinking, clearly, the writer of this has never actually been to a real casino, because they totally would have changed the dice. They would have changed the table worker. They would have done a whole lot, because he wins $12.3 million.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, again, hack novel. I can excuse that.
Well, that's true. That's that, you know, you can get away with a lot when your central premise is this novel's really bad, right?
Right. And they're supposed to win that much money to buy their way out of the casino. And so it's like, well, it's preordained.
It is. Well, they didn't. Did they say that they realize they're the foreign investors? So I think Riker's plan is that they will win all this money. I don't know if they actually in the novel win all the money, but it doesn't really matter because this episode's bad. So it doesn't matter.
Yeah. I do want to say in all of those scenes of, you know, being cool and steely and gambling and all that, Brent Spiner is amazing. Whatever else we say about this episode, he does a great job in that.
He does. Data, I always find Data to be interesting. One of my favorite characters. Also, very inconsistent. Because there's always, you know, the writers think it's funny, and it is funny, so they do it all the time, of having Data say random phrases that you're like, Data, why is Data saying this? And so he says something like, Daddy needs a new pair of shoes or something like that. After kind of being unfamiliar with the whole concept of a casino, suddenly he is a frequent. I guess he is accessing his database. And
he has accessed his Damon Runyon. He's about to break into Luck Be a Lady. It's fine.
It's fine. I'm not saying it's not entertaining. I just always – it's amusing to me the inexplicable suddenness in which Data falls into these things.
Hey, Nathan, fade me. See, you know –
It is true. Worf doesn't have much to do in this episode. He shoots a wall to see if it's a real wall, I guess. It turns out it is not a real wall. I don't know. There's no damage. It doesn't matter. They talk to the character actor who plays the front desk guy and who is in everything at this point in time. I don't know who that character actor is, but he is one of those people that you're like, oh, that guy.
Is that Sam Anderson?
It could be.
I think, I mean, I first saw him. Well, I first realized who he was when he was on Perfect Strangers. But it turns out, you know, going backwards, he was in WKRP several times. He was in all sorts of things well before that.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he was in Lost, all kinds of stuff.
He's that guy.
He's that guy.
Hey, it's that guy. He doesn't really do anything except frown and make sure that the bellboy make it clear to us that Mickey D is a dangerous character, which does not really pay off at all. Although the bellboy that we meet gets killed. Nobody cares. This episode, it's so I'm getting bored recapping it. There's nothing. I'm trying to think of anything
There's
exciting.
Not that much going on. It's like, oh, it's endless loops. And hey, let's go down this corridor. And hey, we're in a casino again. And oh.
Yeah, they can't get out. Data scans everybody. They're not robots. They're not living. They're just they're nothing.
They're just
robot
there.
Or not, not. they are, you know, once again, they're in a bad novel, so all the characters are very shallow. There's a slinkily dressed woman who is hanging on an oil tycoon. I don't think he actually ever says that, but he's a Texan with a hat that he gives to Data for a moment, and then Data's walking off, and he's like, I'll take the hat back, which I thought was funny. there is a good – I did like when Data suddenly finds traces of DNA, and so they go up in the – as Worf calls them, the turbo lift, and he doesn't know how to operate it. And he's like, these are broken, and then Riker presses the button, and then they go – that was funny. But they find the astronaut who had survived. There were seven people on this capsule or whatever, and only one survived. He woke up, and he was in – the Royale, and they find he's dead now. They find his mummified skeleton in a bed, which was a pretty good shot, and I thought an interesting scene.
Yeah,
and they find the copy of the book that this place is based on, and his diary, in which he basically says, "I have spent the last 38 years here. I welcome death's sweet embrace." And I don't blame him because I spent 45 minutes watching this and I was ready.
You were tempted.
I was tempted. I was like, oh boy, that looks pretty good. But I did like that, you know, I mean, it's sad that he spent 38 years with these characters who seemingly only a few can even interact because there is a good scene. Another good scene where Data and Riker and Worf are trying to talk to people and they're all ignoring them. And just kind of doing whatever, you know, bit background character work they're supposed to be doing in the novel. So there's an old lady at the slot machine. There's a guy who's looking for somebody. And they just completely ignore Riker and Data because they were not written to interact with anyone. So seemingly one assumes for 38 years that guy could talk to the bellboy before he gets shot. Mickey D, the hotel manager. The oil tycoon guy and his lady friend. And that's it.
Mm. And I remember at the time when it aired, like the conceit is that whatever happened and the capsule was contaminated by aliens and the aliens felt bad. So they recreated this because they thought it was his favorite thing. It was his favorite book. And at the time, I'm like, that was the only book you brought with you? There was nothing. That was the only one that survived. Why would that even be?
It doesn't make any sense.
It's so bizarre.
It is. It's very strange. I don't get it. I don't get this episode. I don't. And then, so here's the point, right? The conceit. Okay. We find out the aliens built this place because they felt bad and they wanted to give apparently, you know, what the platonic ideal of human life is, which clearly must be this book. How did they learn how to read English? We don't know.
yeah, there you go.
But that's neither here nor there. But why did they set it up in such a way that you could not – it's a puzzle that you have to figure out before you can leave. It doesn't make any – why can't you just leave whenever you want? That's my big problem with this because that's the main issue. Otherwise, they would have just left and gone along. And obviously, it's a show, so that would have taken 3 minutes. Right. And they need to fill the time. So I know why there was that problem. But when you're thinking about, you know, the story itself and if it works or not, there's no real reason why that would be a problem.
Yeah, I mean, quite literally, what happens at the Royale stays in the Royale.
That's right. So we can assume that he tried for 38 years just walking through that revolving door over and over again and just never being able to leave. And I guess the aliens never talked to him.
Apparently. And why did it take him 38 years? Why did he die a natural death? Why didn't he just go, oh, I'm doomed, and kill himself?
That is a good question. Well, maybe, you know, I think that the preservation of life
him?
Is,
well, maybe.
He just didn't want to die. Although, what would he do for 38 years? I don't know. One is they can't have any books in there. Because even if they are, they would just be like, you know, those fake front books as a decoration.
A stage set, yeah.
Exactly. So you would just, I guess, maybe he really liked gambling?
But he's still in his astronaut outfit.
For 38 years, so he just wore that one outfit.
Oh, my God.
Or maybe he knew he was dying. And so at the moment, he changed out of his tuxedo that he had on, obviously, and changed back into his NASA spacesuit.
And in case anyone from Earth finds me, they're going to be really freaked out.
It is pretty freaky.
Surprise! Yeah,
but it's not good.
Again, it's a great reveal. It's like all these little elements that are kind of cool. And then the instant you start thinking about them, they just fall apart.
Yes. And there's not even – so when they go into the Royale, they lose connection with the Enterprise. And you think, well, that's kind of interesting, right? They might think they're dead. Maybe they'll beam someone down to check it out, which they don't do. But Counselor Troi can still sense them. So everybody knows they're okay. Right. And she knows Riker is amused. So nobody's really that upset. It's very strange, but they do work very hard to get back in contact, and they do get in contact again. But it's just like you said this earlier. Once there's kind of a moment of tension, it is immediately revealed to be fine, and so there's nothing. There's like, oh, maybe there's something's going to happen. No, it's
nope.
Fine. Don't worry.
No, nope. They're okay. I feel great joy and gratitude. No, that was the pilot.
Yes. And they end, they win lots of money, they give it away. There is a good scene where Captain Picard says, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll read the novel, and we'll know what happens. And you could just tell that he is like, why am I? Speaking of a man who loves Shakespeare, Captain Picard, big Shakespeare fan, hates this book. He's like, oh, this book. And it's even worse. I feel worse for Captain Picard because there's a scene where he and Counselor Troi are just listening to the story that we're watching. So this would be even worse as an audiobook, I feel. if I couldn't at least look at the funny costumes and very kind of 80s, early 90s stuff they had people wearing, that's really the only joy that I got out of the show. If I couldn't see that and I just had to listen to it, it's even worse.
Right. I mean, there's, like I said, there's so many interesting tidbits in here that you could do something with. I mean, just the thought of the existential dread of being there for 38 years and them worrying about, well, maybe we're going to be trapped, but we're smart because we're Starfleet and we have an hour to go. You know, it's like, okay, well, they're not going to worry about it. You know, but there's a really scary kind of story to that. There are all these, you know, I would love to see Torme's original script just to see what he was going to do with it.
That's true. Or they could have had, you know, come and somehow the astronaut is still alive and then they figure out the only way that this can, you know, we can be released is if Mickey D kills this astronaut.
Right.
And so there's that moral dilemma, but the astronaut's like, no, it's cool. I have been trapped here and I couldn't figure it out. Please let him kill me.
Right. And again, right there, that's more interesting. Because now you have that moral question and you have a sacrifice and you have, I mean, there's so much there. And I mean, apparently Torme's original idea was to, was that it was an astronaut actually trapped in his happiest memory. But of course it's over and over and over and over and he's slowly driven mad. And I gather he may have been alive in that script. I'm not sure.
That would have been more interesting.
Again, more interesting. And so it's kind of frustrating. I mean, when I was originally watching it, I mean, we watched the pilot and my mother and I immediately were like, we're going to write a spec script. And because we really twigged to the characters right off the bat.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Patrick Stewart, how can you not? And so we were watching, it wasn't just like, hey, we love Star Trek. It was like, we're going to analyze this show as we watch it. We're going to figure this out. And very quickly, certainly by season two, we were kind of demoralized and like, oh, these people really don't know what they're doing. And you know, you'd see like DC Fontana leaving the show and David Gerrold suddenly wasn't with the show and Bob Justman suddenly wasn't with the show. And you're like, oh, these people who've taken over don't do this so good. And so it would be, where was I going with that? You know, you'd kind of look at these things and go, this is where the show is beginning to hit a turning point, where now it actually has some good ideas and it has some really clever hooks and it has no idea what to do with them. It is just, it's treading water. And, you know, we can do something that's kind of creepy and, oh, that's, you know, that's a great thing for the teaser. And then you actually have to have an episode around it.
It's true. And season two, I'm just looking at the list of episodes in season two. Not so good. Season
right,
two.
Right.
Season one, I mean, not so great either. But, I mean, any season that ends with Shades of Grey.
Right.
Man.
And, you know, you're slowly building up to Measure of a Man, which is probably the first legitimately good all the way through episode.
Yes, that's a fine episode of Star Trek. And that's, you know, you get a glimpse of what could be. And that's why you're like, I'm going to stick with this.
Right, right. And, I mean, even up to that point, like I said, we twigged to the characters and we were just like, all right, the plots are going to suck. The dialogue is going to suck. I really like Patrick Stewart. I really want to see this character, right?
Yes. And season two is when, well, you said you were with the characters from the pilot, but season two is when I feel like the actors were really starting to get comfortable in with their characters. And Riker in this episode is Riker. He's got that smile on his face when everyone is like, ooh, we are in danger. This is really weird. And he's just like, are you kidding me? We're in a casino. This is fun. They pay us to do this. And then Data
says,
we get
to solve a mystery in a casino.
It's what more could you want?
Yes, we're the foreign investors. Of course we are.
So I like that part. And my like of the characters helps me watch episodes like this. But man, tough going.
Well, and I have to say, we have listener feedback already.
What?
This hasn't even aired, and we have listener feedback. I mentioned to a former student at the college here, who's been a friend for a long time. He's an incomparable fan, listens to a bunch of the shows, named Kevin Corlett. And he said, out of nowhere, he sent me a message the other day. He goes, perhaps you can help me, because I know I didn't make this up, but I ran across some dialogue once. Quote, you know that episode of Next Generation, The Royale, where they're trapped in a casino? Man, I love that episode. I've probably watched that two or three times a week for the past 10 years. Unquote.
What?
It beats me. It's driving him crazy. He can't figure out where it's from, so he's hoping that maybe someone out there in the listening audience has ever heard that or has any idea what that's from. Because as soon as he sent that, I said, funny you should ask. I'm doing a show.
That too is my favorite episode of Star Trek.
and you know, my next question is, what is wrong with that person?
That if I feel like that person is in their own personal version of the Royale, where they are stuck watching the Royale over and over again.
There are, you know, 200 episodes, but it's all this one 200 times.
No. And now there are people who are listening who are like, sheesh, lighten up about this episode. It's my favorite episode. If it is your favorite episode, you know, you be you, man.
There are worse.
This is not the worst. There, in season two, there are worse episodes. but I just, it's not good. It didn't, this is an episode of Star Trek that I frankly never have to see again.
Yep.
I've seen it more than once, and it's enough.
I've seen it twice. I saw it when it aired, and I saw it for this.
And that's really probably enough. I could see how someone would like it. That someone is not me.
It has its charms.
It has its charms, and it has potential. I'm not angry with it, as I say so often on Random Trek. I'm just disappointed that it didn't live up to what I think is a really great premise. And the moments that work in this episode really work and just kind of shine a light on the rest of the episode and how it's just not working. If you ask me. So your final thoughts, David, on the Royale? I agree. So if you had to be, if aliens abducted you and felt bad about it, and they said, hey, what book do you want to live the rest of your life in? We will construct it for you. What book would you pick?
What book would I pick?
See?
Wow.
I don't know. I don't have an answer for this myself. Now I have to ponder. It has to be a good one. So I'm not really, I wouldn't.
Yeah, it's. I can't pick a bad one because we've seen how that goes.
That's right. And it's a tricky question because of course it depends on your personality, but I wouldn't want to be like, you know, in a John Le Carré novel for the rest of my life, because then it's like all spies and suspense and I wouldn't know if I'm in danger all the time. I don't need that.
Right. I mean, I could actually be living in Richard Russo's Straight Man right now.
That's true. Because
that's an academic novel. In a small liberal arts college. Oh, God. No.
Or White Noise by Don DeLillo.
White Noise, yeah. Moo by Jane Smiley.
Yes.
That's even better. It's a Midwestern. It's
Look at that. I think I'd probably pick one of Ian Banks's The Culture novels, just because just live on one of the giant culture ships and just not interact with the rest of the plot and live a happy life.
I mean, I could actually be living in Lake Wobegon days right now. But if I had to pick one, I might pick Wonder Boys by Michael Chabon, which is one of my favorite movies. Actually, I think I prefer the movie Don't Tell Michael.
He is a listener, and he is very angry right now.
No! I think I actually told him that in person. little glitting there for you. It's one of those stories that, again, the characters are wonderful. It's a lovely story. It's an academic thing. And certainly the movie, every time I watch the movie, it doesn't matter what time of day or night it is. As soon as it's over, I just want to get up and write. And there's not a lot of stuff that like acts like mental Red Bull the way that movie does. I don't know what it is about it, but I want to write when I see the movie. So I could live in that for 38 years. I'd be okay with that.
There could be worse things.
Yeah.
You know, you could just move to Pittsburgh.
Yeah, well, one of my favorite restaurants is in Pittsburgh.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. See, it's all coming together.
The Church Microbrewery, which is in a deconsecrated Catholic cathedral. It is really, it's gorgeous, good food, really good beer. But you don't drink beer, so enjoy the food and the scenery.
That's right. I would next time I'm in Pittsburgh. I live in Pennsylvania. I've only been to Pittsburgh once, so.
Well, you have to drive the length of the state. My God,
it is pretty far away.
I've done that drive. You'd want to do that drive.
No, it's nice, but.
It's long.
It is. I mean, I'll just go to Harrisburg. No, Harrisburg is not exciting at all. Sorry, people who live in Harrisburg. I've been to Harrisburg many times, so I feel like I could say it. Although the farm show complex is lovely, so
it is. It is lovely. Yes.
But there you go. I don't know why I'm worried about offending people who live in Harrisburg, but
this episode is so good.
That's right. No. Well, David, I feel like we've done our job here and discussed as much as we possibly can, unless you can think of something else that you want to say about the Royale. We are done.
All I can say is I'm kind of craving a quarter pounder with cheese.
Me too. So let's order some room service. The kitchens are open until 6. Well, thank you, David, for joining me.
Anytime. Always a pleasure.